From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Bolton Howe joins us. Some incredible stories, followed by, of course, conversations with Linda. Here's what's happening. In Portland, Oregon, armed anti-government protesters led by Amon and Ryan Bundy have been acquitted of federal conspiracy and weapons charges stemming from that takeover of a federally owned wildlife sanctuary in Oregon last winter. To the surprise acquittals of all seven defendants in the federal district court, there was a blow to the government prosecutors who had argued that the Bundys and five of their followers used force and threats of violence to occupy the reserve. But the jury appeared swayed by the defendants' contention that they were protesting government overreach and protested and posed no threat to the public. That's an amazing story when you think about it. Tonight, a plane carrying Republican vice presidential candidate Mike Pence slid off the runway while landing at New York City's LaGuardia Airport late this evening. No injuries. The aircraft was a Boeing 737, tore up two tracks of concrete on the runway before coming to a rest on a patch of grass. The Federal Aviation Administration said in a statement that the crushable concrete runway safety technology, which is called Engineered Material Arresting System, worked. It stopped the plane. Hillary Clinton's lead is widened by just a little bit over Donald Trump in the latest IBD TIP presidential tracking poll with a 43% to 41% edge. But I got to tell you, the margin of error makes this almost a dead heat. And Russian President Vladimir Putin has slammed as hysteria claims that Russia has tried to interfere in the upcoming U.S. presidential elections by hacking all over the place. He says it's ridiculous. Craig Hewlett, of course, has been monitoring these situations, and of course, we've turned to him for many news stories, and I'm doing that now. Craig, I want your reaction to these polls, first of all. What do you think?
Well, I think, as you know, I probably ignore the polls.
Yes.
They always turn out different in the end. I do know one thing, that the elite in this country really did want to have it, Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton.
Oh, they sure did.
And the plan would have worked so well, now that you see how much they've got against Hillary, if Jeb Bush was in the race, they would be already prosecuting her. She'd be thrown out on her butt, and Jeb Bush would be the president. Well, that didn't work out, and they've got Trump. But we can see the mechanism in place to take Hillary out, and yet they're stalling it. They're giving her a pass. Hopefully, she'll become the president in the elite's thinking. But if that happens, she won't last 4 years, and I think she'll be indicted, impeached, crucified in hearings. It'll go on and on and on. And then guess who? In 4 years, they'll try to run to save America.
You got it.
Jeb Bush.
You got it. Now, what do you think about Vladimir Putin saying, hey, ridiculous, we're not hacking anything?
Putin's not doing any of that. There's no question the Russians aren't doing any of this. This hysteria about Russia is being stirred up to keep the American people, how should I put this, ignorant of what the reality is. There is a war brewing. I hope this is not true. I hope we don't face a third world war. But the BRICS countries have decided to invest $500 million in Russian gold deposits. They've reopened the Kamchatka mine. And Russia and China both are starting to sell bonds, $80 billion of bonds backed by yuan. If this ends up backed by gold, this would otherwise be considered an act of war in any other conditions.
Yeah, that's right. Craig, set yourself some time on election night for us, would you?
Certainly.
All right, Craig Hewlett. The terrorist in charge of the Islamic State's finances in Iraq, listen to this, has managed to escape the war-torn Iraqi city of Mosul, stealing millions of dollars from the jihadi network. Abu Mustaz Qatani swiped important documents from ISIS as well when he took off. He left with a woman from, she was a German woman. They have no idea where they are. He had multiple roles with ISIS, handling the finances and supervising female suicide bombers, but he took millions. He's gone. I think they'll find him. Somebody will. More than 300 Twitter employees will be affected by layoffs as part of a restructuring, a familiar signed to the reductions announced a year earlier. And separately, the company has announced it will discontinue Vine, which is a video app launched in 2013 that played brief clips on a repeat loop that struggled to compete with Facebook's Instagram, did not work. Amazon wants to open up 20 brick-and-mortar grocery stores over the next 2 years, and the online retailer believes the U.S. market has room for up to 2,000 of its Amazon Fresh-branded grocery stores over the next decade. Now, what they're going to do is plan to operate a 20-location pilot program for its grocery stores by the end of 2018 in some cities like Seattle, Las Vegas, New York, Miami, and the Bay Area. Now, the company wants to experiment with different versions of the stores during this pilot program. 10 of the grocery stores will be click-and-collect drive-up spots for Amazon's customers to pick up their online orders. The other 10 will be traditional stores where cart-pushing shoppers can stroll the aisles while touching, smelling, and inspecting produce and other goods for themselves. We'll see how that works out. Pete Burns, frontman for the British new wave band Dead or Alive, best known for this 1985 hit, You Spin Me Round, has died. He was 57, died of a massive heart attack. What else is going on these days in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Hey, Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Good evening, George. It's been a very busy week. I have a couple really interesting reports here, but I'd like to preface my reports by complimenting the Marietta Times newspaper in Marietta, Ohio, specifically their journalist Peyton Neely, who almost single-handedly solved one of the cases that the National UFO Reporting Center had posted to our website. It turns out to have been Skylanders released at a wedding ceremony, and the newspaper was willing to publish the photograph and do a little article, and people came forward and told us, no, we had launched those things at a wedding ceremony and not UFOs. So it's a classic example of how a local newspaper can do a lot of good with regard to resolving.
Sure is. If they want to, they can do it.
Exactly. If they want to. And that's the criterion that we always stumble up against. But like to start with a report from 10 years ago, Kansas City, Missouri, our favorite state.
10 years ago? What's going on?
Yeah, this is an interesting one, George. A woman who describes herself as an investigative journalist was seated in her bedroom. She was communicating with a colleague via computer, had her television on off to her left. Her attention was drawn to her right just in time to see a sphere. What appeared to be her to be a metallic sphere drifted into her bedroom from the hallway, maneuvered all over the room, got within an arm's length of her. She was flabbergasted by what she saw. And here's where it gets interesting. She asserts that the object went right through the wall in front of her as it exited her bedroom. And I'm sure there's some people in our audience who are properly skeptical about a report like this, but we have several other similar reports on our website. I would like to direct them to very interesting reports that came from Meriwether County, Georgia. April 13, 2003, a similar case in which three adult people, two brothers and the wife of one of the brothers, were driving in a sealed vehicle. Windows were rolled up. They saw some red objects trailing their vehicle on a very remote road, and suddenly those objects got into the vehicle, allegedly. Very, very interesting report from Meriwether County, Georgia. So we're getting reports like these all the time. A little more recently, Park City, Utah, a week ago tonight, the 20th of October, grandmother was downstairs in her house. Her granddaughter was upstairs in her bedroom. Suddenly, the granddaughter started screaming. The grandmother raced up the stairs just in time to see a disc disappearing in the distance. The granddaughter described that that disc had passed, she estimated, within half a mile of their house. Here's where it gets really interesting, too, George. They must make them tough in Park City, Utah.
I bet they do.
Because they decided they wanted to chase that disc. So they jumped in their car and went out after it, hoping to get another sighting of it. That report is posted to our website. 2 days after the Park City event, Crum, Texas, up north of Dallas and Fort Worth, just west of Denton, Texas, woman was out trimming trees in her yard, heard a couple of what she identified as military jets approaching from the northeast. She looked up and focused on the jets that were passing over at a leisurely speed, she writes, but her attention was drawn to a silver disc that was just behind the jets. I know there's glider activity at Denton, Texas, but I don't think they use F-16s as tow planes there.
No, not
very,
at all.
Very interesting report. Another report from Alvord, Texas. The same night, October 22nd, last Saturday, woman driving on a very lonely, forlorn highway looked up ahead of her as she was driving towards Fort Worth, and she was in Alvord, Texas, sees a green object descend vertically in front of her. She didn't know how far away. It suddenly rose up and descended a second time, started moving right and left. Driver right beside her on the highway, they both slowed down to about 40 miles an hour, she estimated. So she was sure that the guy had seen the object with her. Then the object approached both of them, passed very close to them, and disappeared in the night sky. Very interesting report. And that, too, is freshly reported to our website. Last report from Asheboro, North Carolina. This morning, 10 a.m., an adult male was standing outside looking at the beautifully clear sky. He saw a blimp or disc or cigar-shaped object, dull gray, in the vicinity of Asheboro, North Carolina, up northeast of Charlotte. I think you were in Asheville. This is Asheboro.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a very, very high-quality report from a witness with good credentials. And there are about 95 more very interesting reports recently posted to our website.
A lot of activity. You dressing up like an alien on Halloween, Peter?
I hope so.
All right, my friend.
Not a clown.
Be well. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. In a moment, horrible things, tragic things have happened on a lot of America's bridges. In a moment, Rich Newman joins us. We're going to be talking about his work, Haunted Bridges, on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Let me tell you about our special guest for this hour. And then, of course, Linda Moulton Howe joins us next hour with her amazing series of reports. Rich Newman is the author and filmmaker living in Memphis, Tennessee. He's a lifelong enthusiast of the paranormal, and his group is called Paranormal, Inc. He's been involved with research, investigations for at least a decade. His articles have appeared in Haunted Times, Paranormal Underground. His book is called Haunted Bridges. Rich, I got to tell you, amazing stories of these bridges. Welcome to Coast.
Thanks, George. Great to be here.
How did you start researching these kinds of hauntings on bridges?
Well, I actually wrote a book a couple years ago for Llewellyn Publishing called The Ghost Hunter's Field Guide, which has over 1,000 haunted places in it. And as I was going through all these different places, I kept coming across these different haunted bridges. And at the time, I thought, well, I don't know if I really want to be encouraging, you know, young investigators to be going out in the middle of traffic onto bridges to look for ghosts and things of that sort. So I sort of sat it aside. And then my publisher, Amy Glazer, suggested years later, we should do a book about haunted bridges. And it just so happened that I had already had a leg up on that investigating and research. So here we are.
Well, and I like your warning at the end of the book, too, for people if they go out hunting. And I'm looking for some of these bridges and locations, many of which, of course, you've illustrated in your book, to be very careful about what they're doing. This is not a very safe type of investigation. They have to be careful, don't they?
Oh, yes, especially considering that a lot of the stories about these bridges and urban legends usually involve something along the lines of parking your car on the bridge, and then putting it in neutral and ghostly hands will push your vehicle.
Right.
Or even getting out of the car and leaving it in the middle of the bridge and something will chase you back to the car, that sort of thing. And yeah, that's not a very safe thing to do.
Some people have reported you've put a little talcum powder on the bumper of the car that you'll see fingerprints, maybe fingerprints of a little kid who may have died there or fallen off, but you'll see little fingerprints as the car is being moved or pushed. That's kind of eerie too, isn't it?
Oh, yes. There's quite a few stories. There's an entire chapter called Invisible Hands in the book that tackles that very subject.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the hauntings associated with the bridges. Most of these episodes, something very tragic occurred, right?
Oh, yes. Well, suicides tend to happen a lot at our most popular bridges. The Brooklyn Bridge, the Golden Gate, places like that have, you know, documented hundreds of suicides. And even bridges where only a handful of suicides or even one happen oftentimes end up with a pretty tragic ghost story. And we also get a lot of car accidents, pedestrians hit by vehicles, things like that, that also sort of spawn a haunting at that bridge.
And we probably have people saying, I wonder if we have a haunted bridge in my state. You pinpoint the locations in the name of the bridge for, and I counted them. You've got all 50 states in here, don't you?
Absolutely. Haunted bridges is just one of those commonalities of all the states. Even particularly certain urban legends and stories are in every state, such as crybaby bridges.
Now, what's a crybaby bridge?
This is a pretty popular story with a haunted bridge, and it usually involves either a mother who was distraught because she was left with her child, or an unwanted child that was born.
Uh-oh.
And the distraught mother goes to the bridge and usually throws the child overboard, you know, over the bridge.
Oh.
And or drowns the child. And now people go to that bridge and they hear the sounds of a child crying.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe even the mother crying, you know, sorrowful for what she did. And usually there's a lot of activity as far as cold spots and seeing mists wandering the river. People often think that's the forlorn spirit of the mother looking for that child.
Does the mother, in some cases, did she jump herself?
Oh, yes. And we even have bizarre stories like, you look at Rogue's Hollow Bridge in Waynes County, Ohio. It actually has a story that it's a witch who sort of seduced a local town member, had a child with him, and when it was discovered what she had done, they pursued her. She ran to the bridge, and then sort of despite the man, threw the child overboard, you know,
oh my
bridge
God.
And killed the child.
And the energy, the negative energy, Rich, around these bridges must be absolutely staggering.
That is absolutely correct. And it's honestly a lot of different, you know, types of hauntings like hotels, old homes, things like that. You can hear some great stories, you know, that these are just loving people who love that place. But the tales around bridges are almost always tragedy.
And, you know, you wouldn't think of it. When you look at a bridge, you just figure, okay, people go across it, cars go across it, buggies, who knows. But when you start digesting the stories you've illustrated in Haunted Bridges, you really see that a lot of horrible things happened on these places.
Oh, yes. I mean, you have these bridges were, during the Civil War, they would often use bridges to lynch deserters. Prior to the Civil War, they would use bridges to lynch escaped slaves, mob justice, that people have been hung there. You've got suicides on bridges. You've got accidents. You've got, you know, a lot of different dark history attached to these bridges.
They have said that the infrastructure of bridges in the United States is deplorable right now. Many of them haven't been fixed or repaired. Now, in some of these cases, the bridges that you mention, how old are they in terms of structure? Are they wooden? What are they, rickety? What are they like?
Well, a lot of the bridges are older bridges. I mean, there are several covered bridges that date back to the early 1800s to mid-1800s. Then you also have modern spans, which are just as simple as, you have a really famous haunted bridge in Ojai, California. And it's a simple little patch of asphalt crossing over a river with some guardrails that has some fantastic tales told about it. So it's pretty much, you know, bridges spanning throughout the history of the United States.
We're going to come back in a moment with Rich Newman. We're going to talk more about haunted bridges. We'll take some of your phone calls as well. We'll get into some of the stories of these bridges. And his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And, yep, circle this, haunted bridges, because we're going to tell you where you can get it in a moment. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Rich Newman with us, author of Haunted Bridges. Rich, you've got to be one of our correspondents. Whenever you're at some paranormal episode, you got to call into the program.
Absolutely.
That would be fun. Let's before we go to calls, let's take a few more of these stories of haunted bridges that really caught your eye. Why don't you give us one and tell us where the bridge was?
Well, I just mentioned the bridge that's in Ojai, California. It's located along Creek Road, just outside Camp Comfort County Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorites just because it has so much assorted activity associated with it. I mean, we have people there who do see apparitions walking down the road, like as if they're leaving the park and headed across the bridge.
Oh, geez.
But in addition to this, we have a story of a vampire that's supposed to be buried in a tomb near this bridge.
A vampire?
A vampire. And if you're in the woods, according to the tale, you will wander around until you come across this stone tomb, and you will know you find it because this large black dog will suddenly appear and accost you for disturbing this vampire's tomb.
Oh my! Now, do people see this vampire roaming around?
This tale is actually quite old, and at the turn of the century, meaning the early 1900s, there were actual reports of people encountering this vampire. One of the most famous tales was a farmer who lived in the area who said that he was getting finished for the night, the sun was going down, and he was headed back towards the house from the field when he noticed this lean individual, really pale, with large fangs, standing at the edge of the forest watching him, almost like he was waiting for the sun to come down before he could get out there into the open field to get at him.
Amazing stories, truly remarkable. When you listen to all of them and you put them in perspective, as you have done, they're really scary things. Now, how did these things start? You know the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. Something real must have happened in order to create the myth or the story behind it, right?
I believe so. To me, that's always one of the fun things about good ghost stories, is the amount of actual history that's tied up into the story. And for me, that's also the most compelling ghost stories, is when you can go back and, you know, people say, oh, in this house, there's a ghost who famously comes down the stairs and does this thing. And then when you research that house, you find out, oh, there really was an incident that happened on those stairs, you know, in 1845. And the more that real history bleeds into the ghost story, the more that I like it and the more scary that I think it is, too.
Has anything ever happened to an investigator who was checking out these bridges?
The bridge that's in California, where they actually shot the film The Lost Boys, the name is escaping me at the moment, it's a quick Google search though, is really famous because it has a little pedestrian crossing that you can walk across the bridge safely. People go there because of the movie Lost Boys being filmed there, and it's the scene specifically where the vampires are all hanging underneath the bridge and then they all take turns letting go. This bridge is actually known for a pretty malevolent spirit that a lot of people think actually is trying to push them off the side of the bridge. Several people have reported going there and feeling this really strong push right at the edge of the bridge, and they almost tumble over.
Was this the one in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
I think it was called Railroad Bridge.
That might be it.
That was a great movie, too.
Yeah. It has the trains going across it, so it doesn't really have an official name, but most people know it because of The Lost Boys.
Ah. And where do we get your book, Haunted Bridges?
Well, it's in most bookstores, and you can, of course, get it online at Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. Pretty much anywhere you go buy good books.
All right, let's take some calls as we continue talking about haunted bridges. Boy, they're everywhere, too. There are some states that have like 10, 11, 12 of these bridges, Rich. Other states have just a couple, but they're out there, aren't they?
Absolutely. They're everywhere. If you really want to go to one, there's probably one close by.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Richard, in Wapakoneta, Ohio. Hey, Richard, question, story. Go ahead.
How do we do? How you doing?
Good.
Have you guys heard about Bloody Bridge in Western Ohio?
Bloody Bridge in Western Ohio. That would be up to you, Richie.
It's not ringing any bells. Is there an official name for it?
Yes, that is what it's called. This is on State Route 65, close to a little town in Spencerville, and this story is based around the 1850s on the canal years.
It's on page 175 of your book, Rich.
Ah.
You've got so many in there, you can't remember everyone.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. This is the story in the 1850s about Bill Jones and Jack Billings.
Right. Over the love
okay,
of
Okay, yeah, this more. Yeah, this was the
Bloody Bridge, that's what it's called.
Story.
Had to do with a guy who was armed with an axe. I hate those stories. I just hate those stories. People walking around with axes just aren't the kinds of people I want to get to know, are they?
No.
That's
a pretty famous story because that's one of the few ghost stories associated with the bridge that's been sort of memorialized. The city actually put that on a plaque next to the bridge and everything because it's frankly a really good tourist draw for the area.
A headless ghost on a bridge out there, Bloody Bridge. Something horrible happened out there. So the reality is real tragedies occur, murders, deaths, whatever. And then later on, something very paranormal occurs, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The suicide bridges are particularly saddening to me. I mean, a lot of different investigators love to visit the Golden Gate Bridge. They love to visit the Brooklyn Bridge because so many stories of suicides, deaths, and actual other paranormal events happen on these bridges that it just draws investigators from all over the world.
Let's go out to your neck of the woods in Memphis, Tennessee. Katrina's with us. Hello there, Katrina. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Hi, Rich. Well, I have a question for Rich.
Okay.
He's in Memphis. I'm in Memphis. Any interesting stories around this area?
And you're named after a hurricane, aren't you?
Unfortunately. Except I spell mine with a C, and okay, but it still sounds the same.
Yep. But go ahead.
Well, there's not a lot of stories as far as bridges go in Memphis. I mean, if you really want to go to a great haunted bridge in this area, I would say cross the state line into Mississippi and check out Stuckey's Bridge. If you've never heard of that, it's a story that involves a man named Stuckey who was reputedly involved with the Dalton Gang. And he would hang out at this bridge and sort of base his operations from there. And he would visit local inns and sort of waylay people that he thought would have money. He would rob them, kill them, and then throw them off of this particular bridge. And eventually the law caught up to him. And in a nice bit of irony, hung him from the bridge. And now we have a lot of different ghostly activity happening there.
Is it safe to visit these places, Rich?
I would say that absolutely. The only dangers are the real ones.
Like getting hit by a car or something like that.
Getting hit by a car. There's water under the bridges. You don't want to fall off or go wandering underneath it, unless you have a lot of light, that's really safe. I would say there's more real-world dangers than dangers of anything happening, via the spirit world.
Let's go to Alex in Rochester, Minnesota. Hi, Alex. Thank you for calling.
Hey, George. How are you doing?
Good. Today? Thank you.
First-time caller, by the way, just to let you know.
Oh, super.
The only number I can actually dial. But no, I want to say thank you a lot because you do a great show every time, and I listen to you almost every night. I'm a truck driver, so I drive and I listen to you.
Well, we do it for listeners like you, Rich, believe me. And thank you so much, Alex. Go ahead.
But I actually have a story about a covered bridge out in Burns Park, Arkansas.
All right.
North Little Rock, Arkansas. This was back when I was a teenager. A lot of us decided we were going to get up and go out there and have a couple drinks and, do what teenagers do, party, have fun, yada, yada, yada. And I was the one that was designated to drive and all that good stuff. So we were going out there. We first thing that happened was a deer pops out in front of us and actually hits the car on the side.
Wow, that could destroy your car, too.
Well, it literally rammed us. So the back passenger driver's side door was dented in from where his head hit.
And what happened to him?
He ran off.
You mean he survived that? Wow.
He just ran off.
He's got a headache, I'll tell you.
So we start going across the covered bridge, and literally we see nooses hanging up and everything like that, swinging, swaying.
Jeez.
To get to the other side as quickly as I possibly can. It's a one-lane covered bridge. And we get out of the car. I'm looking around because I'm freaking out. And it was in the middle of the summer. It was like July. And we're seeing nooses hanging up in there and everything else. I get out. I get curious. So I go over there and I start looking. And I'm the only one that was even brave enough to go over there because of all the nooses and
yeah.
stuff. And I'm looking out this little port window that they have set up there. And all I hear in the like little tiny whisper is everybody's gonna die.
Jeez. Where'd that come from?
I don't know. I freaked out. I looked around. Nobody was around me. Everybody was all by the car on the other side of the bridge. So, and then I started feeling really good cold chills, and a freaking raven came up and just sat.
Wow. Right. What's the name of the bridge? Do you know?
Yeah, it's Burns Park Covered Bridge.
Burns Park, okay. That's not in the book. So I guess there are even more out there, Richie, aren't they?
Oh, yes. I would probably have to write two more of these books to get them all.
You probably would. Are there any specific states that are more haunted than others?
No, but it does seem like the states that have a lot of the older bridges in the Northeast tend to have a lot more stories about them.
All right, let's go next. Alex, and thank you, by the way. Nancy in Victoria, Texas. Hi, Nance. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
I got a question from Mr. Newman.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering if there's any stories about haunted bridges here in Texas.
Oh, there are many stories of haunted bridges in Texas. You must have, what, 20, almost 20 bridge stories in Texas, Rich?
Oh, yes, and Texas has a lot of really unique bridge stories as well. There's a thing going on in Texas that I find really fascinating. They have this whole phenomena with goat men. There's specifically a bridge in Denton, Texas, called the Old Alton Bridge, that's associated with a goat man story. And it's just this bizarre story where you have a goat herder who was suspected of crimes locally. So they catch this poor fellow, lynch him, and he's dead and gone. But now people are starting to see, depending on who you ask, either the apparition of this man near the bridge here at Denton, or a version of this apparition that actually has a goat for a head. And in some cases, he actually almost appears as a satyr, this half goat, half man person, resembling Pan, walking along this bridge. And we actually have two bridges in Texas that have these kind of stories attached to them. And throw in that Texas also has, and I think, believe this is in Marshall, Texas, an actual troll bridge.
Where trolls would just hide underneath?
Yes, people say, just like the story, they say they cross the bridge, and then they get this stench of something horrible. Almost a cross between feces and sweat,
and
anything that you could pretty much think that would be a foul smell coming from underneath the bridge. And then they begin to hear this inhuman kind of grunting and moaning. And you even have at least two witnesses that I was able to track down who actually saw the thing come out from underneath the bridge and take off through the woods. And they both described it as being between 15 and 17 foot tall, giant, half hairless, half hairy, a troll. I mean, exactly what you'd sort of in your mind's eye think a troll would look like.
What would you rather do, have a ghost in a house or have something haunt a bridge?
Well, I, as an investigator, would rather have the house just because the controlled environment would allow for me to have better odds at getting some evidence on audio and photographs and things of that nature. But there's some advantages to the bridge, too, in that it's at least usually a public place. So that those end up being really good places for early investigators to have access to go out there and do some investigating.
Eric in Huntington, Indiana now. It's your turn, Eric.
George!
Hey!
Hey, this is our mind control guy. How's everybody doing tonight?
We are well, thank you.
Excellent. I was wanting to ask your guest about the infamous Bunny Man Bridge and what is the story behind it. I mean, there can only be one story, but there's so many versions.
Where is that?
I believe it's in Fairfax, Virginia, if I'm not mistaken.
Have you heard of this one, Richie?
Clifton, Virginia. Oh, yes. It's one of my favorites. It's in Clifton, Virginia, which is in Fairfax County. It actually stems from some very real incidents that occurred in 1970. There were a pair of people, the span was about 2 weeks between the two incidents. They were out by this particular bridge, and they would be accosted by this man dressed in a bunny costume with an axe. So, George, you're going to like this.
Yeah, that's a fave, right?
And he would attack their cars with the axe and say, you know, things like, you're on my property, I don't want you around here, and things like this. And they would, of course, drive away terrified and reported this man in the bunny costume. Well, soon, different accounts started springing up of everything from the corpses of rabbits hanging from trees, people seeing the bizarre apparition of a half-man, half-bunny thing in the woods. One particular, I'll say investigator in quotes because we're still unsure if this was truth or if it was just a story that was fabricated, but this Timothy C. Forbes fellow actually claimed that there were some prisoners who escaped from an asylum in the early 1900s and that several of these fellows had survived all these years into the 70s by living off of rabbits in the woods. And so they had become these demented individuals attacking people in the woods and all kinds of different urban legend type stories. But the short answer is the Bunny Man is based on some real events, and it could be anything from a ghost that's still there to some sort of a crypto creature that's half man, half bunny, to just a deranged lunatic who likes to attack people with an axe.
Rich, again, tell people about your website and about Paranormal Inc., what they can do with that.
Well, ParanormalIncorporated.com, all spelled out, is where we like to put our investigations, as well as different EVPs, photographs, and things that we capture while investigating. It's also a place to just sort of keep up with what's going on with us in the book world, as well as investigations, and to give us a call.
All right, my friend. Be well. Happy Halloween. Do you dress up, by the way?
Oh, yes. I think I'll be Star-Lord this year.
Okay, as long as you're not walking around with an axe, okay?
Or dress like a clown.
You got it. Rich, thank you. Rich Newman, the name of the book, Haunted Bridges. By the way, a breaking story tonight, too, is they think in Jerusalem that they may have found the tomb of Jesus. What an amazing story. We'll work on this for you and see if we can pick up a guest or two at the not-too-distant future. Truly remarkable. Okay, we'll be back in a moment with investigative reporter Linda Bolton Howe.